The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Welcome back to Cancel Too Soon. This is the podcast where we review TV shows that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic and everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I too am a critic. And usually we go into talking about the bad shows for a while before we get the heartrending sigh. We don't get one right at the top. That's really exciting.
Yeah. It's a little something for everybody. A little tease of what's to come. On Cancel. So this is the show where Whitney and I, we watch TV shows that failed. One reason or another, our rule is they can't have lasted more than one season. More than one season, you had your shot. But one season or less, you might have been screwed over. You deserve to be looked at once again to see if maybe you deserve better. And sometimes we find really great shows. Sometimes.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
Almond Joy's got nuts.
Mm-hmm. I like Almond Joy.
Mounds don't.
What are we talking about this week?
This week! Okay, so it is...
You're so depressed over the...
I know.
The show and the candy bars.
I don't like either of those candy bars, actually.
Oh, you don't?
Neither an Almond Joy nor a Mountain nor a Mounds Man am I.
I will take them both from you because I adore those things.
I think that's one of the tricks to having a successful relationship, whether it's with someone you love or just a roommate. Don't like the same snacks.
Yeah, you'll fight over them.
Yeah, well, it's never just like, hey, who ate all of my Mounds bars? Wasn't me. I hate that shit. Problem solved. Must have been you.
There was a short-lived limited edition candy bar of it was orange flavored Mounds. They put like orange flavoring in them.
No,
that sounds amazing.
Like instead of like the coconut?
No, it's like the coconut, but it was like
see the coconut's what I have the problem.
Sort of like an orange chocolate around the coconut.
No. What I have a problem with is the coconut.
Oh well,
so that's
can't help you there.
Exactly.
You take out the coconuts, different candy bar.
So glad we don't have to talk about this show because we're talking about all these candy bars.
Those candy bars are blessed. This show we're talking about is not blessed.
It's actually it's somewhat cursed, if you'll. So we had an event called Scary-tober, and this episode was supposed to come out in the middle of Scary-tober, but instead, watching a show about the Antichrist can really be a kind of hell. So we had watched a show based on the 1970s Oscar-winning horror film The Omen, called The Omen, which had almost nothing to do with The Omen.
Well, we mentioned at the time that it was very clearly an X-Files knockoff. It was more about demon possession and a lot more to do with The Exorcist than The Omen.
Yeah, maybe they would have gotten there at some point, but it was very clearly, we have this pre-existing, well-known IP. Mm-hmm. Let's do an X-Files knockoff using The Omen as, I guess, an end point, because it certainly wasn't a starting point. But regardless, that wasn't the only TV series based on The Omen. The Omen, of course, is a series of horror movies about a child who is the Antichrist. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. No doubt whatsoever. That kid, Antichrist.
The original, and we talked a little bit about the Richard Donner film that came out in the mid-70s with Gregory Peck and Lee Remick, and they have a child, and the child is pretty clearly the Antichrist. A hellhound follows Damien around, and people mysteriously die around Damien. They become possessed, or some weird machinations take them out. If they get too close to the idea that Damien might actually be the Antichrist and they would stop his unholy machinations that are a little vague in the first movie.
Yeah.
There were three sequels. One where Damien was like a young man at boarding school. He was like
preteen,
about 13 years old. Yeah. And that one's really interesting because he didn't know he was the Antichrist. And people kept on showing up at his door and saying, "You're the Antichrist." Like, no, I'm just going to boarding school.
Yeah.
And he kind of figured that out and also realized that he did sort of have these hypnotic things happening around him all the time.
This weird, creepy take on a coming of age story.
So,
not bad. Second was fun.
Damien the Omen 2. The final conflict is complete hogwash.
Sam Neill is the adult Damien, and now he's a politician, and he's going to rule the world. And
he ends up like having big, stupid confrontation with God at the end. And then there was a really, many years later, a really cheap, I think it was a straight-to-video sequel.
I think it was straight-to-TV.
A TV movie sequel, The Omen 4, The Awakening, where it's not Damien anymore, it's a new... Antichrist,
a new reincarnation, and boy, is that movie just trashy as hell. Then we had the failed pilot that we reviewed for Scarytober, and now that it's Scaryvember, I guess it is time
to take a look.
Let's take a look at what Damien is up to in his one season wonder A&E series, Damien.
I imagine you don't remember much. That'll change. The past is like a noose around our necks, wouldn't you say? It's a whole new world. The seal's been broken, the trumpet blown. You have so much to offer. Your father would have been proud. It's so good to see you again, Damien.
Damien, this Damien
follows and in fact shows footage from the original 1976 movie, but it ignores all the sequels.
It's a proper requel along the lines of David Gordon Green's Halloween or Halloween H2O.
Or like half of the Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Yes, this is a direct sequel to. Damien, it aired in 2016. Damien is now, he should be 40, but he's 30 in this series.
Yeah, they just sort of bumped up the original movie to like another like 20 years or something like that. It's sort of like when Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D came out, and it was supposed to take place
a few years after the first one.
20 years after the first one, but everyone had smartphones, and I'm like, no, that should be in the 90s. And they just sort of fudge the timeline a little bit. It makes no sense whatsoever, but it's kind of fun.
Damien has grown up into a blandly handsome man. And
he's played by Bradley James, who is almost certainly...
looks like a Bradley.
He's almost certainly best known for playing King Arthur in the BBC series Merlin, which if you haven't seen it, was basically... you see Smallville? But it's Merlin.
Hey, wait a minute. That has... Because Sam Neill played Merlin, so we have two Damians in that one.
although this guy wasn't Merlin. He was King Arthur, so there
but,
you go.
But that
so got a connection, though.
That Merlin series had two Damians.
The connection is fun.
And in this rendition of things, he's 30 years old. He's a handsome man. He doesn't know he's the Antichrist. He remembers certain events from the first movie because that happened when he was a young child.
But he's actually, his memory of his childhood seems a bit spotty.
Yeah, he doesn't remember a lot of it. There's an infamous scene in the movie where I think it's Damien's nanny or it's a maid.
Yeah.
Hangs herself in some sort of hypnotic trance.
It's in the middle of a birthday party for Damien, and she like... gets up on top of the building or from the tallest window in their big fancy house, and she yells, "It's all for you, Damien! I love you, Damien!" And then she throws herself off of the building with like a noose around her neck, and then she dies. And it's, I can see why a child might repress that.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
He is now a photojournalist, and the actions of the series kick off when he's overseas in like a war zone.
I think he's in Syria.
He's in Syria.
He's in Damascus. He's in a war zone. He goes to a lot of war zones. He's photographed a lot of war.
He's a war photographer.
Yeah. And he and his friends are in a war zone that is suddenly, like, really, really quickly escalating from things are bad and now soldiers are in the street and they're killing everybody. And in the middle of all the chaos, he's trying to help some civilians get out of there. And an old woman says she recognizes him and starts speaking in tongues. and basically kind of awakens the Antichrist within, even though he still doesn't know what the hell is going on. No. And so the rest of the season is everyone in the audience knowing that Damien is the Antichrist, half the cast of the film knowing that Damien is the Antichrist, Damien being told in the pilot episode that he's the Antichrist, and Damien going, but maybe?
Yeah, the I was reminded of that film Mary Riley. Did you see Mary Riley?
Actually, I haven't seen that movie.
Okay, it's a Jekyll and Hyde movie, and John Malkovich plays Jekyll and Hyde in that
good casting.
And Julia Roberts plays the title character, who's, I think, also like a maid.
Yeah.
And a lot of the tension is she's sort of being... She's trying to care for Dr. Jekyll, but then this, like, rough brute Mr. Hyde keeps coming in and mistreating her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's John Malkovich. He just looks like John Malkovich. They didn't even put, like, a lot of makeup on him.
I'm sure his posture changed.
They put, like, a wig on him and I think, like, a little sharp chin, but he still looks like John Malkovich. And so much of that movie, the drama stems from the fact that she can't tell the difference. That she thinks these are two different people. And if they wanted to do that, they should have gotten two actors.
Yeah, or at least a lot of makeup or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
I know,
you start losing respect for the character after a while.
If you've read the original Jekyll and Hyde book, they do look very, very different. You wouldn't be able to tell that they're the same person. Although, traditionally, Jekyll and Hyde movies, they get the same actor.
Some people play it off really well. I thought that BBC series we covered, Jekyll, even though... The series itself eventually flew off the rails. James Nesbitt
was
really good. He knew what he was doing.
Because but the thing is, nobody is mixed up between the two of them.
Right.
He looks the same.
He makes it off that they're brothers, and nobody questions that because they're so different.
And he does a really good like physical performance, distinguishing between the two. Here, a lot of, in Damien, a lot of the drama is stemming from: am I or am I not the Antichrist? And do these weird things happen around me by weird coincidence? Am I being stalked by this shadowy cabal of demon worshippers who are somehow making all of this happen around me? Or am I actually, like, channeling demonic forces through me? We know he's channeling demonic forces through him.
It's called Damien.
It's a
sequel to The Omen. The Omen didn't leave a lot of room for speculation.
Left it very clear that Damien was indeed the Antichrist and survived at the end of that first movie, and indeed he had sequels.
Imagine if you were watching, let's say, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man comes out, okay? And at the beginning of the movie, he's bitten by a spider, and he's got all of these spider powers, and everyone keeps calling him Spider-Man, and the Green Goblin keeps trying to fight him, and at the end of the movie, is like Peter Parker going, oh shit, I'm Spider-Man. It all comes together now. It all seems so clear. And you're like, where the fuck were you, Peter?
I'm sure there are plenty of superheroes out there where, like, their superhero persona is like another personality, like they can't recognize each other.
It's happened. I think Moon Knight was like that, if memory serves.
Yeah, I know that was a deal with a character called the Sleepwalker.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a different entity.
Yeah, it's like being lived in the brain of a human, and whenever he fell asleep, he kind of emerged from his head and fought crime.
Neat, weird idea, Sleepwalker. Yeah. That was a fun guy.
But, this idea that he is sort of grappling with whether or not he is the Antichrist, rather than coming to terms with the fact that he is the Antichrist.
Yeah. Feels like we're just wasting time.
Yeah, we're sort of piddling around, and shortly after this sort of awakening within Damien, he is approached by the big star of the show, the big get of the show, Barbara Hershey.
Yeah, she plays a woman named Anne Rutledge, and she's a friend of the family. From going way, 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 way back, knew his dad. She's working for a secret organization that has been trying to bring about the apocalypse for quite a little while now. Mm-hmm. And as the series progresses, we see a little bit more of the comings and goings of this organization. Turns out, once you add bureaucracy, everything's boring. So once you get board meetings about who's been fired and who's going to take your place in, like, Damien middle management, it gets a little dull. But the idea is I'm actually
very entertained by the notion that the Antichrist and these gigantic demonic forces that are going to bring about the end of the world still need to fill out paperwork.
Yeah.
I think there's something really comedic about the fact that there's still, like, a lot of mundane details to the apocalypse.
Now, theoretically, these people are there to make Damien's job easier, put him in positions to achieve power, greatness, wealth, political whatever. But they're also a bunch of greedy assholes, and they also want to take as much for themselves as they can. Basically, he said, listen, we've all read the Bible. Okay, we've skimmed it.
But we know Revelation really well.
We've heard, that's the one. That's the good stuff. That's where it gets really weird. That's not true. It's all weird.
Revelation is not about Satan.
I know. You
there's an analysis of the book of Revelation, which they bring up in this series.
I know.
I think it's really fascinating. Anyway, we'll get to that.
Real fast. They read the book of Revelation. They know the Antichrist is coming, and they figure, let's bet on this winning horse. And so all they're trying to do is just get on Damien's good side while also not telling him. Like, so this old woman basically shook me in Damascus and said, you are the Antichrist. Be the Antichrist, Antichrist. And Damien's just like, yeah, that's weird. And then Ann Rutledge is just like, hey, after about one episode, I'm basically just going to tell you you're the Antichrist. Mm. And he's like, oh, that's horrible, and I don't believe you, and that's super duper weird. You can only come over to my apartment, like, every episode from now on. Like, you're just invited constantly.
Sort of have a chin wag about demonic things.
And we'll have this weird sexual tension, which we will never act on. Ever. There's a moment where he shows her his, like, he's got this mark on his forehead, three sixes.
It's under his hair. It's under like his up on his the top of his
That's
head.
How he never noticed it before. And it's on like in the back of his head, so I get it. Because when was the last time you looked at the back of your head? Okay, you were the exception person listening right now who said recently, but most people haven't.
I want to say that it's a good thing the Antichrist didn't get early onset male pattern baldness.
Yeah.
If he was bald by 30, he'd just see those sixes.
Yeah. Makes you think. But there's a scene in one of these episodes where he shows Ann Rutledge, Barbara Hershey, this tattoo. And she goes, oh, that's interesting. And then she excuses herself and goes into the hallway. And she just basically has an orgasm standing up, leaning on a wall like, oh, that's the stuff. That's Antichrist.
That's the demonic power.
Oh, that's good shit.
Oh, that's good. Bring me my jackal jerky. I need something to gnaw on while I consider this.
Barbara Hershey, I will say this right now. The cast of this is a real mixed bag. Most people are given nothing to work with and are doing about as much as you can be expected.
There's all these ancillary characters that are really just filling space.
Mostly,
they're not adding to the drama.
No.
They're not, you know, giving Damien somebody to talk to. Mm-hmm. They're not allowing Damien to expand his character. That's his friendship with them doesn't say anything more about his character. Mm-hmm. One of the characters is an ex-lover of his, and that is
Tiffany Hines.
Kelly. Yes.
And she dies in the first episode as a sort of like, ha-ha, bet you thought she'd be important. And then instead we start following her sister Simone, played by Megalyn Echikunwoke. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It feels like they started focusing on the sister because they really shouldn't have gotten rid of the love interest so quickly. So now, like, it's the whole movie takes place like 2 weeks after that pilot. And within 2 weeks, she is completely over the death of her sister. There's this moment in like episode 3 or something like that where she knocks on Damien's door and Damien's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, my sister died 3 days ago. What do you think?
I'm despondent.
Yeah, you think I'm just... No, I'm really upset about is I stepped in some gum on the way over here. What the fuck do you think is wrong with me? Jesus.
These were Manolos. Yeah.
So she's all over the place. Just like, now she's his lover, now she hates him, now she thinks he's the Antichrist, now she's talking to this weird nun.
And the weird nun is the one who wants to kill Damien.
Yeah, and I actually really like her. What was her name? I need to look that actress up, because she's really good. I'll find it. One of the side hustles in this show is...
Robin Weigert is the actress's name.
Robin Weigert, very talented. I think she brings a lot of presence to this. I wish she'd had more scenes with Barbara Hershey, because when they're together, they've actually got like two really good actors. Who represent opposing things, and they have something to talk about.
Barbara Hershey's clearly the villain of the series.
Oh, yeah.
But Damien's not the hero of the series. In fact, Damien has no agency in this series, and that's maybe the biggest flaw of the show.
He's just sort of wandering around, not sure what to do with himself.
Like, he's getting a lot of information, and there's a few interesting discussions he has about sort of ethics and morality, and there's, like I said, they actually talk about the Book of Revelation and how some people think it's a very literal book, like, that the seals are going to break and monsters are going to appear, and but a lot of biblical scholars and literary critics understand that it's sort of a coded criticism of Caesar Augustus.
Yeah.
And they bring that up, that there's different interpretations of this. And Damien, in fact, says that he is himself an atheist, so he doesn't believe in the devil. How could he believe that he's the son of the devil? Run with that. That's some interesting theological discussions.
Like, we always have these stories about how people find their faith. And look, I'm not a person of faith. But I've read a lot of good stories, and I've seen a lot of good movies and TV shows of people who find their faith, and I believe it. And I believe that for this person, it's really meaningful and powerful, and it can be really, really great. What if you did that with someone finding their faith that they are the Antichrist?
In the devil. Yeah,
that's
there
an
you
interesting
go.
It's, story.
It's like in a darkened version of a Christian parable.
Yeah, an anti-Christian parable, literally.
So they have a few discussions like that. There's one very dark storyline where it's just in one episode. I think it's maybe the sixth or seventh where he has many conversations with a soldier who is wounded.
So there's an episode earlier on in which he's being chased by one of Ann Rutledge's goons, or he's chasing them actually. And he runs into a subway, and there's a woman on the subway with her very young son. And the young son, like, falls into the subway track right when the train's coming, and Damien very heroically saves the child. He goes to visit them. Turns out they were going to see their husband, who is at a VA hospital, and he's not doing well. He's probably going to die sooner than later, but at the moment he's just deteriorating. Damien spends a lot of time with this family, and he takes pictures of them as they try to improve his quality of life and as they suffer. And it's actually kind of well handled and kind of poignant.
Pretty sensitive. Yeah.
And then at some point, Damien is talking to this guy, and this guy says, "What I would like to do is end my own life. I know that all I'm doing is extending the inevitable. My days are constant pain. And as much as I love my family, I don't wish for them to
watch me rot, essentially. Yeah.
Which is a decision that some people have to take, and I'm not in a position to judge that. I don't generally believe in killing oneself. However, there are extenuating circumstances there that you have to at least have a conversation about. Damien ends up facilitating that. And then at the end of it, He's been put through so much.
But he doesn't just facilitate it. He's a war photographer.
Yeah.
And this is a soldier. So this is like part of the soldier experience. So he actually photographs the entire process.
Yeah, which is really heavy.
It's incredibly dark. It's incredibly heavy. Yeah. It's like the one moment when the show actually like kind of gets kind of interesting.
Yeah. I've not seen that story before.
He's so darkly moved by what he's witnessed and helped facilitate that he can't take it anymore.
Well, and he's also been going. Yeah, the thing that I think the show doesn't really address enough, even though they start to a little bit, is the fact that he's a war photographer. He may not have like been running around with a gun shooting people, but he's seen horrible shit. He is traumatized, and indeed, once he starts having these recovered memories of all these horrible things he saw as a child. Those are also traumatic. Though you can also get PTSD from those kinds of experiences as well. He's suffering too. And at the end of this episode, he decides he's going to take his own life as well. And then we get basically, correct me if I'm wrong here because it gets a little weird. We got like a whole episode that's kind of a fake out where it looks like everything's accelerated really, really quickly. And he's like, a whole bunch of people have died and like been taken in by the evil devil worshippers. And then at the end, we find out that was all kind of a hallucination as he was killing himself, right?
No, all that stuff happened.
All that stuff happened with like the tattoo parlor guy who died and everything like that.
Yeah,
and the sister who...
Well, there's a little bit of a fake out with the tattoo parlor guy because he has the birthmark on his head and...
I forgot how
he made his way to the tattoo parlor, but yeah, he learned that he was told to tattoo that on a baby at one point many years ago, and like about the time you were. So I was actually the guy who put that on your head.
Yeah.
That's not a birthmark. That's something somebody ordered so you could look like the Antichrist.
There you go.
And so he, for an episode, believes he's not the Antichrist. But then they do this sort of double back where it turns out he shouldn't have said that, even though, like, he made that up.
I guess.
At somebody's behest. And then the bad guys said, oh, wait, you shouldn't have told him that. And they kill him.
Yeah.
I think the good guys were trying to convince Damien that he wasn't the Antichrist.
The fact because, that we're confused is really telling, I think.
I saw some of the TV miniseries, but I read the whole book of Good Omens.
And, I read the book as well, yeah.
And a big element of that book is the Antichrist kind of has to believe he's the Antichrist for all of this to work. And big joke is that there's like a switcheroo at birth. Yeah. They don't remember which child is the Antichrist.
It's actually exactly the opening of The Omen, which is that two people are giving birth at the same time. One of them is the Antichrist. One of them is just born to like a wealthy family. But they switch babies, and that's how The Omen gets started, basically. I'm oversimplifying it. Good Omens begins with, and there was a third family that wasn't part of the plan. They just happened to be there. And the evil nuns who are like responsible for switching the babies switched them one too many times. And now nobody knows which one the Antichrist
is.
Whoops. And that's
course,
funny.
And of course, all the demons start following the wrong child. And
So all of a sudden, accidentally, instead of this child being raised in this incredibly corrupt environment or being raised by a demon and an angel who are both like vying for the child's soul, like angels and devils on his shoulders, he ended up just having a really nice, conventional childhood in like an English suburb.
Yeah.
And ended up being a regular kid.
But there's like demons out there helping him. So it's like, we're going to send him a hellhound. He's going to be. And so, yeah, I really want a dog. I want a dog in my life. Oh, yeah. What kind of dog? You want a hellhound? No, I want like a little puppy with an inside out ear. And it barks a lot and pees in the carpet. And the hellhound's like, well, shit. And it turns into that thing. Turns into this like little playful dog. And in being a playful dog, just becomes a playful dog.
Which again, it speaks to the idea that morality is left up to a person. People have individual choices based on how they're going to live their lives. That was true for Jesus. Jesus had a choice. Jesus didn't have to do all that shit. And it'd be true for Damien as well.
Almost like God gave us free will.
Although, is it really free if it's given?
Sure. Yes. Yes, it is. End of discussion. We solved it all.
We're not going to fall down there.
But I brought up Good Omens, though, because there should be an element in Damien that he has to sort of believe in himself and has to sort of force himself into an evil life. He has to choose to be the Antichrist.
Uh-huh.
It's also an element of the movie Devil's Advocate.
A
very fun and completely sleazy movie that's just a blast to watch. But Damien, like I said earlier, it doesn't have any agency in this. He's not making any kind of choices to be the Antichrist or to not be the Antichrist.
Well, what's weird is that they're not even trying to make him the Antichrist. You would think, now that he's like 30 and he's been awakened, you know, like Jesus didn't really get started on his whole, you know, his whole magical adventures until he was 30. Yeah. So yeah, okay, fine. So we'll give you some time to just sort of, you know, wander around and do your own shit. And then now it's time to hunker down and get to work. But he turns 30, and there's this sinister organization, and there's this woman who's following him and trying to manipulate him, but you know what they're not trying to do? Want to be the Antichrist. They never, hey, what if we give you power? What if we give you sex? What if we give you everything you've ever wanted? What if we tempt you to want to be the Antichrist, or we try to push you and put you in situations that make you hate God or something,
or
anything.
Want to destroy humanity, yeah.
Trying to influence him, trying to move him in the direction they wanted to go. Instead, they're just being sinister around him and making them not trust him, and I'm not sure how they expect that to work.
I should not be citing this as a positive example, but in the Star Wars prequels, the evil emperor did a better job of like manipulating the young Darth Vader into doing evil things.
Cause he befriended him over a long period of time. Yeah. He asked for nothing in return for a long period of time. He was just very supportive and helpful. Even when other people were being reasonable, he was unreasonably giving. And as a result, Anakin really liked him. And then when an opportunity arose to like, oh, are you afraid of something? you know, the Sith can fix that. And boom, there you go. Now we're done. It's just waiting for the right moment, for the waiting for the right temptation.
It's really badly written, but the concept is there.
The concept is strong.
Yeah, there's nothing here to tempt Damian. And also, we understand the significance of the Antichrist through popular culture. We understand that... I'm no biblical scholar, but, you know, the Antichrist is the one to bring about the apocalypse.
That's what we've been told.
That's what we've been told.
Yeah. There's a lot of there's a lot of weirdness going on with it.
Well, I mean, like
just,
I said,
just the way that the Bible handles the idea of the devil as a concept anyway is, frankly, really oversimplified in Western culture, especially popular culture.
Yeah, well, it's actually way more nuanced in the Bible than sort of the popular interpretations. But yeah. And the Bible is a pretty broad work of literature. But they don't lay any of the rules out in this series either. Okay, Damian is the Antichrist, and there's demons around. They repeat the line of dialogue, "This is all for you." There's some, like, holy assassins with evil daggers around that might stab him and try to kill him.
Yeah, every once in a while, he'll just walk into some place and someone who's particularly, I guess, susceptible to influence, well, even if they'd never met him before,
will just sort of fall under his thrall.
And then start stabbing themselves or something, which you'd think would get old fast.
But we understand, you know, there's evil influence about him. He's going to bring about the end of the world. We know this is not really said out loud in this series, but we understand that about Damian and the Antichrist. How is that supposed to work in the rules of this series?
Yeah.
How is he going to bring about the end of the world? Is he going to rise to power? Are there steps along the way? When are you going to start breaking the seven seals in the Book of Revelation?
Yeah, are the four horsemen part of this? Get into some of the nitty-gritty. At the
let us know what the steps that Barbara Hershey is going to take in order to facilitate the end of the world via Damian.
We need, because it's one of those things where, on one hand, it can be a little frustrating and you don't want to be like too expository and give like this giant expedition dump where everything is laid out for you. However, when you're doing a tale that is based on an idea, especially a fantastical idea, whether it's science fiction or fantasy, that people know about or people have seen other versions of, at some point you need to clarify, here's what it's like here. It's like if you're doing a vampire movie. You need to clarify what kills a vampire in this universe.
What kind of vampires are we dealing
with? Are these vampires where they can only be killed by sunlight? Is it stake through the heart? Are you one of those like bullshit vampire stories that says silver is a thing, even though it's supposed to be werewolves? I'll never forgive you for that.
One of those bullshit vampires.
That's the one. Every time it's like, oh, it's silver. I'm like, fuck you. Werewolves have so little, and you're going to take that from them? Come on.
A friend of mine always took issue with what he called squishy vampires.
Yeah, like it's so easy to stab them.
Like, you stab them through the heart, and they just sort of, like, melt or turn into ashes, like, immediately. It's like, no, it should be hard. You're stabbing through somebody's ribcage.
I actually did appreciate that they had a line to that effect in From Dusk Till Dawn. It's like, have you noticed when you stab them, they're really squishy? Like, I at least appreciate that you addressed that. So, like, my point is this. So, if you're doing a story about vampires, you need to clarify, what are these vampires like? What are the specific rules of these vampires? Because they might not be the exact rules you have in your head based on whatever vampire story you've read or seen before. Same thing with the Antichrist. There's a lot of satanic horror out there. The Exorcist, The Omen, the Conjuring movies, etc. These are a lot of different, similar, but not necessarily the same rules and theology and mythology. At some point, you need to sit us down and explain it. You don't need to do it all at once. It probably wouldn't be a good idea to do it all at once, but it would be a good idea to give us like a little here and there, just so that we can follow along, just so we know what to expect, just so we know what the rules are. There's none of that. Ever. And there's so many good reasons to do so. And Rutledge can explain it to him at any time.
Yeah.
Seriously, after like three episodes in, he knows what she's about. Like, the veil has been lifted.
If she's not going to tell Damian, there needs to be a scene of her like saying, "Yeah, step one is complete." Something like along those lines. We've just broken the seventh seal. We turned a zebra inside out underneath a full moon. Whatever it is they need to do. Just, you know, explain that there are steps to this and that we're working our way toward the goal in a tangible way.
Or if that's too weird to have her, like, do that whole, like, if you ever see in a movie or a TV show someone say the words, "as you know," it means that there is no reason to have this conversation right now, but the audience needs exposition because the characters in this story should know it. However,
as an audience member, I appreciate that.
I appreciate that too. However, there's usually a better way to do it. And here there would have been a great way to do it, which is we've been going through a lot of weird shit. And now all of a sudden, here's this nun from the Vatican who like performs exorcisms for a living. Mm. And now she's teaming up with like the dead girlfriend's sister. Tell her.
Huh, there you go.
Explain
stuff to her. She's on the outside.
Here's some answers. She'd have all these questions. Mm. Well, how does that even work? You don't have to believe it. But you would have an opportunity to just explain some shit. When you have been waiting and befuddled for so long, just explaining shit can be pure catharsis. One of the last episodes of Battlestar Galactica, the rebooted Battlestar Galactica from the turn of the century. I love calling it the turn of the century because it makes everyone feel old. But it is. It was the turn of the century. But if you look at that version of Battlestar Galactica, there were a ton of mysteries and plot threads that... As the series was wrapping up, there was like 4 or 5 episodes left. We still didn't have answers for all of it. There's one episode where someone undergoes surgery and like all of a sudden like their memories are unlocked and then like two other characters get to talk for the first time. The whole episode is them just explaining shit. And it sounds boring, but by that point in the show, it's like taking heroin. It's like, oh my god, they're explaining shit. They're explaining why all the Cylons have the wrong numbers, and none of that makes any sense numerically. Why is that? There's actually a reason for it. It's not a great reason, but there's a reason for it. Thank god.
They finally thought this out.
Yeah, yeah, and it's great. It's so satisfying, and here you could have done that just a couple episodes in, because after a while, I'm just floundering. I'm like, I get it. There's weird Satan shit.
But that's all we get is weird Satan shit. Yeah. And it eventually comes to a point where the nun from the Vatican wants to confirm, because she's having a little some doubts as to whether or not Damien is the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. So she talks
to Damien.
Yeah, she talks to him and she ends up kidnapping him and ripping his scalp open.
Yeah.
Like she wants to look at the tattoo. But tattoos do like, or the birthmark.
Yeah.
But now the authenticity of that birthmark has been brought into question by the tattoo artist. So now she has to make sure. So she carves through his scalp right under the birthmark and finds the same birthmark on his skull.
Okay. Fucked up.
So and she does it like in this underground chamber. It's not like in a surgery room. It's operation theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of sanitation.
Yeah, she's involved. Just sort of like gouging into his skull.
You'll be fine. Suck it up. Here's a stick to bite on.
And she kind of freaks out. And it was at that moment where she's apprehended by Barbara Hershey. And Barbara Hershey puts him through his Damien Pitt training, I guess.
No. The nun's putting him through that, actually. And the idea is that she was supposed to...
I thought Barbara Hershey put him through
that. No. The nun is putting him through that ostensibly so that maybe she can like rip the Antichrist out of him. Because he doesn't want to be that.
Yeah.
And she wants to give him a chance, but... She ends up that whole experience of like basically, order to purge your demons, I must bring them out of you. But all that does is confirm to him that he's the Antichrist once and for all. Mm. And it ends up basically unlocking him and making him, he doesn't necessarily want to do all the Antichrist stuff, but he finally accepts that he is the Antichrist, which makes him more dangerous.
And one of the last shots of the series is he's sort of standing out in a field, having gone through this demonic experience, and everybody's just sort of worshiping him. He's like, great. This is good now.
Yeah, there's that. And once he starts actually taking control of his powers, there's some cool stuff. Like, there's a bit where all of the, like, the Satan worshippers and everything are just like, okay, Damien knows he's the Antichrist now. Kill the girl. And Damien's just like, no. And then everyone starts shooting each other and then themselves. and he's like, cool. And then, like, everyone sort of follows him to this, like, graveyard. And even there's this one cop who's been following his trail this entire time. And I sympathize with the cop because the cop is just trying to make Damien's story make sense. And I'm like, me too, cop. I also agree that the story doesn't make a lot of sense. But this guy is trying to be logical about it. And finally, he shows up at this big scene. He's seen so many people kill themselves. So many things make no sense whatsoever. He ends up at this graveyard. All these Satan worshippers are there. And there's Damien. And... His girlfriend or his girlfriend's sister, who's now his girlfriend, gets shot in the head. And then Damien brings her back to life in front of everybody. Well, and everyone's
he bleeds into her head wound and the blood brings her back to life.
Who cares how he did it? He did it. My point is it's like.
Well, he did it by accident is my point.
Well, my point is he has the power to bring back the dead. Again, when Jesus does such a thing, we won't shut up about it for 2,000 years. Can we not be impressed for a minute?
Okay.
So everyone here is like, okay, I actually just... This whole Satan worshiping thing was like a day job for me. Like, you know, every once in a while you just go to church and you go through the motions, but it's mostly there to socialize, that kind of thing.
Like,
and now it's like, oh, I believe now.
It's like that one guy in Iron Man 3. Mm. Like all the bad guys are chasing after Iron Man and he disarms them all with his iron suit. And the last guy's just like, you know what? I don't even like these guys.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Bye. Don't shoot me.
But here that guy becomes a true believer. And even the cop who has been trying to stop Damien this whole time is now just like, oh, well, I believe in this then. And even that guy starts bowing down toward the Damien. I actually thought that was kind of a cool moment because I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
That was an interesting journey. So the series ends with Damien accepting his role as the Antichrist, which frankly should have been episode 2 or 3. At the very least, he should accept that I am the Antichrist or that people think I'm the Antichrist and learn to deal with this, because this whole I don't know if I'm the Antichrist or not is incredibly anticlimactic when the movie is called Damien and it called, I mean, like they use footage of Gregory Peck. You see pictures of Gregory Peck on walls. Which is weird. We know. We're so far ahead of this series.
Yeah. If this was... I've known I'm the Antichrist since I'm a child. I was a child. But I don't believe in that. I don't want to bring her out at the end of the world. I'm actually a compassionate human being.
Yeah.
Who is trying to fight the own demonic forces that I myself am bringing out.
Yeah.
He's trying to be an ethical Antichrist. That's an interesting series.
Yeah, bad things keep happening around him. He tries to undo them. There's this sinister cabal that is constantly trying to manipulate him so that into more complicated ethical situations that make him want to be the Antichrist.
Try to compromise himself.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When you have that situation is you've got not so much a Christian tragedy as a Greek tragedy. Mm. This is Oedipus being told, hey, listen... some bad shit's gonna happen. And Oedipus is like, could you be more specific? And they're like, they won't like it. Oh, all right. And it's like, and then trying to avoid that. Mm. Trying to avoid what has been prophesied for you. And then ultimately being unable to escape it because it's now tied to your being. There could have been something kind of poignant about that. And it could have been something really subversive about telling a story about the Antichrist in which the Antichrist is actually a very sympathetic person.
Yeah,
because they're trying to do good in a world that wants them to do bad, and who doesn't feel like that sometimes, regardless of your religion? You're trying to be an ethical person, you're trying to live a good life, and there's so much shit out there. Sometimes, some days it's easier than others.
Yeah, and this is another show, and we've said this before, that should be more like Brimstone.
Monster of the Week, Damien fighting a Monster of the Week.
Well, the premise is just, imagine less Monster of the Week and more just this idea of somebody who knows they're damned, like the lead character of Brimstone. He talks to the devil in every episode.
Right.
But he still, even though he knows he's damned, he's going to go back to hell at the end of all this, is still trying to do good. At first, it's through obligation, and eventually it's just because he has an ethical side. And what is the actual philosophy or theology of somebody who has committed terrible crimes to the point of going to hell, given another chance? Can they cleanse themselves?
It's amazing how much better the show would be if it just had... a structure. Any structure.
Yeah, any kind of structure.
Any structure whatsoever. Just some sort of, even if you could do this like the Incredible Hulk. And it's just him traveling.
The itinerant Antichrist.
Yeah, I'm the Antichrist. Everyone wants this shit for me. I'm running from my responsibility or my fate or whatever you want to call it. And I'm walking the earth like Kane in Kung Fu. And I'm just, every week I run into a different person, a different situation. There's a really, really great movie about Jesus Christ. It's not based on anything specifically in the Bible, but it's very well done, called Last Days in the Desert.
Well, it is based on something in the Bible. It's about his days in the desert.
It is, but the actual incidents that take place in the movie are not specifically in the Bible. Yeah. But basically, before Jesus went off on his,
40-day sabbatical, we'll say.
Well, no, it's during the sabbatical. But before he went off to do all of his big Jesus things, like he was a carpenter, it wasn't working out, he needed a change, he goes off on a 40-day sabbatical into the desert to think some shit out, and when he comes out, he's like, I know what I'm going to do, and then he does that instead. I'm simplifying it. But he goes out into the desert.
Fudging a little of the details, but all right.
The gist is there. If you know, if you care enough about Christian theology,
I'll let you have it.
If you care enough about Christian theology to know more than I do, you know it. And if you don't, I'm giving you the gist. We're moving on. Jesus is out in the desert, and in this movie, Ewan McGregor plays Jesus Christ. And he also plays the devil. And the devil challenges Jesus Christ. Hmm. And he says, you think you're going to go out there and, like, save people's souls? You think you're going to go out there and, like, make the world a better place? Well, I challenge you this. You're going to run into a family on your way out of the desert. Man, woman, and their young son. If you can't solve their problems, what good are you? Hmm. It's simple problems. Just a man, woman, and son trying to get by. Good luck. And it's just Jesus trying to figure out how to solve problems.
In a practical way.
And actually learning lessons about, like, okay, when is it better to say nothing when someone's pouring their heart out to you? You know, when is it, how strongly should you give advice? When is it a good time to preach? And when is it a good time to behave more like a peer? It's actually a very well done movie. It's maybe one of my favorite movies about Jesus Christ. It's really good. And I feel like you could have done that from the opposite perspective, where here's Damien, and he's just like, I guess I want to tell you to do bad things, but you shouldn't. Yeah. I don't know. Like, and I'd be so confused. It'd be such an interesting story to tell.
And we're, of course, also thinking that this is somebody who's trying to reject his mantle.
At least at first.
We could also have the same series, this itinerant Antichrist series, where he's sowing discord.
Yeah, he's good to be able.
Any number of Stephen King stories about these itinerant demons who come by and sort of like tempt people and tempt others to do bad things.
It's Fantasy Island, except the island comes to you.
The island comes to you and like he tempts you and in a very demonic way gets ordinary people to start doing bad things to each other and then just moves on.
Like imagine if Needful Things was a show.
Yeah, Needful Things is that character.
Yeah.
There's so many ways if you gave Damien something other than his, how unsure he is about whether or not he wants to be the Antichrist, because that's not enough to build a series on.
Damien's existential crisis might be interesting if this wasn't a tie-in to The Omen. If it wasn't. Mm. If this was just called Steve or whatever like that, and you just don't... People think he's like, the Antichrist, but maybe he's not.
So we would have to not be sure if he himself was the Antichrist.
If we didn't know either, this show, I still think it would just be... A lot of the show's just kind of badly done. The pilot episode is weirdly badly shot and edited. Like,
yeah,
it's just...
It feels like they had a longer pilot that they had to trim down.
Or something. I don't know. But, like, yeah, it's an awkward mishmash of scenes that run too long. There'll be shots where, like, people walk out of frame and then the shot just lingers for a while and then eventually Barbara Hershey bounds into the frame and it doesn't feel like an interesting pacing choice. It feels like we forgot to get coverage. Like it's not a good pilot. But regardless, if this had nothing to do with The Omen and it was just about some guy who may or may not be the Antichrist, I might have been okay with having an existential crisis about it for a whole season.
Because we would be able to make our own decisions along the way as well. He's not.
We could share his doubt.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, we could if he feels doubt, we could go, well, maybe maybe there's something else going on. Maybe he's not the Antichrist. Maybe he's an alien, or I don't know. There could be other theories. Why not? There could be other theories, my point. It could be something else. Yeah. Something else could be afoot. This could all be an elaborate prank. Like Ashton Kutcher's latest season of Punk is really elaborate. Like, it's weird. But because it's The Omen, we know exactly what it is and just get to it. Just get to it. What are you doing? What's the point? Just get to your shit.
Quit stringing us along with this mystery that we already know the solution.
There's no point. It's like watching Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. It's just like, just get to the part where they're Fantastic Four, for God's sake. Take forever, my dear God.
Did you just say fantastic?
Yes.
That's a really terrible film.
It's not a good movie. God, it's a shame because I actually like the cast. The cast is solid. They could have a really good Fantastic Four with that cast.
I like that cast, and there's like little elements. They start a couple interesting movies and then stop making them after a while.
That's a shame.
The idea that they're all horrified by their superpowers was a really interesting angle, but they don't run with it.
No, because they cut away like to, like 9 months later, and they're all fine with it now. Like, fucking damn it.
The Invisible Woman can't control her invisibility, so you could just sort of randomly see her internal organs. Like, that's freaky stuff.
That initial body horror bit is cool. I wish the whole movie had been that cool. But anyway, any excuse not to talk about Damien. That's Damien.
It is Damien.
Damien, just real fast, because we didn't run down any of the vital stats of this.
Right.
This was developed for Lifetime. Isn't that fucking weird?
So it's an A&E series, but they developed for Lifetime?
It was developed for Lifetime. A&E ended up picking it up instead. And it ended up airing on A&E in 2016, 10 episodes. It was developed by TV writer Glenn Mazzara, who also worked on The Shield. He worked on Walking Dead. He worked on that show Hawthorne. He worked on, he created for television the TV series based on the movie Crash.
Okay,
remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like Dennis Hopper hosted that shit or something. It was weird. It's a long, long career.
Never saw it, but I remember when the show was out.
Yeah, long, long career, that guy. And then he did Damien. And Damien wasn't very good.
No.
Was Damien canceled too soon?
Oh, God, no.
No.
No, I don't need to see more of this. There's no promise here. There's not even a premise here. I don't know what the premise of the show is supposed to be. Damien has a crisis about being the Antichrist. Okay, what's he doing? What's the premise of this show? Like, you just describe things that happen in the show, but yeah, I'm frustrated by its complete lack of direction, the vagueness of the character, the frustration that I know how it's going to end when I go into the series.
Yeah,
it even bugs me a little bit that they didn't take some of the more interesting concepts from the admittedly inferior sequels. And The Omen is... it's well-regarded, but it's not as classy as it perhaps has a reputation for.
No, it's pop filmmaking, but it's good. But it was the devil's advocate of its time.
There you go.
It's better than you would expect it to be.
The drive-in version of The Exorcist.
Yeah.
We got to watch that on a rainy day in high school.
What, The Exorcist?
No, The Omen.
Oh, The Omen, okay.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before. It's like,
it's a
rainy day, we're going to stay inside today, and we'll just get to watch a movie.
Just watch David Warner get decapitated?
Yeah.
That seems a bit much, but all right.
It's an awesome scene. I love that scene.
No, don't get me wrong. I had to watch Die Hard in school. I don't think you're allowed to do that now. I don't think you're allowed to watch an R-rated movie in school without at least a permission slip.
We were all seniors. I think we were all 17.
I realize that, but still, there's always going to be that one parent who complains. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that is it for Cancel Too Soon this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next time with a review of a series called Perpetual Grace Limited. That's a contradiction. How can you be perpetual and limited? Makes you think. But the movie,
About what exactly?
The series. It was a series that premiered on Epix in I think it was 2019, and it stars Ben Kingsley, Jimmy Simpson, and Terry O'Quinn, and Kurtwood Smith, aka the other Terry O'Quinn, and also Timothy Spall. So really good cast.
I like Timothy Spall.
Luis Guzman is in this. Like, it's really, really cool. Jackie Weaver is in this. Mm-hmm. And it is about a young grifter who decides to insinuate himself into the life of a pastor played by Ben Kingsley. But haha, Ben Kingsley has secrets. I know no more about it than that, but we've been asked to do it, so we're going to do that. So that's coming up next time.
It connects if we're going from the Antichrist to a show about a pastor.
Why not?
Still continuing with Christian themes.
I can work with it. Anyway, that's coming up next on Cancel Too Soon. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Very special shout-out and thank you to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Without you, our shows would not exist. And it just means the world to us that you're contributing and helping them exist.
Mm-hmm.
So if you haven't joined up yet, if you would care to, we would love to have you. We have a variety of tiers, and for each tier, you get stuff. You get to vote for future episodes. You get bonus podcasts about things like Batman and Star Trek and the Academy Awards and commentary tracks. We do online hangouts as well. So all of that's there. Thank you so much to everybody who has already signed up.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't afford to do that, please don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter at Critic Acclaim. I am at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibel.
If you would like to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, did you watch Damien? Did you like Damien? Tell us.
Yeah, send us an email.
Great to get that perspective.
We want to hear what we're missing.
Yeah, please. You can let us know. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of our show, We've Got Mail. Whitney, what is our snail mail account?
You can send us an actual physical letter. Send it to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641-565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
That's right. And, of course, if you head on over to Salt Cat Soap on social media, that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Salt Cat Soap is the soap store run by myself and my partner, M. Lapis Da Silva. We sell a whole bunch of designer soaps. We just unleashed a whole bunch of new designs for the holidays. So if you want to get some stocking stuffers for your friends, family, relatives, or if you just like to clean yourself and smell good and have good-looking soaps that are handcrafted by myself and M. Lapis Da Silva, you can. The links are on the social media page, but just check us out on Etsy. Look for Salt Cat Soap, all one word. And don't forget, Whitney has radio dramas.
I do. If you're a subscriber at the $20 tier, you get them. They're just a perk of being on that tier. Or you can just buy them separately if you'd like to. Contact me through all the social medias. I'm on Twitter and on Instagram. Send me an email if you know it. And yeah, just you can Venmo, PayPal, or Cash App me. Yeah. And I can mail you an MP3. One of them is about a time-traveling lesbian bar. Mm-hmm. It's got a talking crab in it.
Nice.
One takes place in a goth counterculture store that was here in Los Angeles, a real store. And it's just a conversation between a clerk and a customer. And there's another one that about a VHS cassette that can predict the future.
Nice.
All of those are for sale. And there's another one in production currently.
That's very exciting.
It'll be out in time for Christmas.
All right. So that is all for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. That's such a wrap. We will see you next season.